As some of you might not know, Baruch Hashem, we finally bought our house yesterday. We got our keys. Yeah, Mazel Tov. So now, as soon as that happened, it's like, whoa, like there's all this stuff to do. And I bring this up for a relevant reason. I find it really hard to concentrate and to focus on anything else, because you get to Shemona Esrei, and now you start to think about, well, we need bookshelves in this room, and you know what I'm saying, and where the kitchen cabinet is going to go here, and it's just...
Try to build a house by yourself.
What's that? Try to build a house by yourself? Yeah. You did this. I can't even imagine. We just, I don't know, like, you know what I'm saying? And the struggle that I guess I'm sort of trying to get my hands on is, like, everything becomes about like, stuff.
Just how many thousands? That's
and money. But the money, actually, I don't want to focus on the money, because the money is there.
Just try to keep a balance. Like, don't get so into the gushness. Just try to keep a balance.
Rana, now raise the issue. This is the issue. I bring this up for a good reason. Karen, can you there's a book over there, second bookshelf, Derech Hashem, on the side.
In the house.
Okay? We're dealing with, like, right there, Derech Hashem side, right there, exactly there. Okay? It's just very hard. I find myself like, he's like, oh, well, we should put shelves here. And what, like, I don't care what the handles look like. I don't choose the handles. But, like, you have to choose.
Every little thing.
Also, like, really, do you really care what shape the toilet is and whether it's on the ground? Like, not really, but then you do, because once you're choosing already, you really...
Yeah, you're stuck with it for a number of years. You're going to pay the money already.
Exactly, but then you become...
Make sure it's wall hung, that's all I can say.
Thank you. You become... See, everybody's got an opinion. You become so entrenched in the...
It's easier to...
In the technical... Like, the way you said, the gashmius of
the minutiae.
It. The minutiae of the gashmius.
Because you have to do
the
it.
Problem becomes... there isn't a balance. Because when you engage, when you immerse in something, it overtakes you, it defines you. You become like, you know, like, where are we going to put the books? And where are we going to move everything? It does become you. The balance, that's the question. The question is the struggle of the balance. But how the heck am I supposed to...
It's short-term.
Yeah. I was just going to say, it's temporary. It's not
once
forever.
You've made all those decisions, then you just have to do it.
Yeah, maybe for this summer. Just forget about Shemoneh Esrei. Forget about Kavanah during davening. Is that it? That's like, yeah. I'm doomed to not concentrate.
No,
just screw over a little.
Or you can employ somebody else for you.
Yeah, I have. But you still, like...
They still come to you. This
part, come on.
Limits your choice.
That's right. It's still... Don't worry about it. Okay. All right.
Do you have to pay for damage done to this house as well?
What? I have a good decorator recommend. My sister-in-law, couldn't do without her. Now, I never thought I'd have a decorator. It's not so much a decorator. She's like designed it, whatever. It's important. It has to be done. Okay. So I want to start. What?
People don't realize they need one until they have one.
No idea. Just so that all the crazy details
Sharon,
that we're going to put.
Sharon, looking
the...
at granite. How many places did we go to ship?
It's... And I'm not doing it. My wife is doing this. Okay. So I want to start by talking about... Like, we're going to talk today in Perek Yud Aleph. We're going to talk about Halotcha, about the mit'oninim, and the desire for the meat. Okay?
For the what?
Meat.
For the meat. They wanted meat.
Oh, meat.
Meat. So we're going to talk about that specific, and we're going to talk about what the problem was. But in order to do that, by way of introduction, I want to read you a short section from Derech Hashem, which we just finished. What was the point of why do we sit in a sukkah? Like, what's the nature of the sukkah? So, as you well know, right, there's a big machloket. Do we sit in a sukkah because they sat in Sukkot or because of the Ananei HaKavod, right, the clouds of glory that were in the desert? And this clouds of glory in the desert is very relevant to what the Jewish people were doing in the desert for all that time. Okay, so says the Ramchal, Rabbi Moshe Chaim Luzzatto. Okay, he lived in Italy, I think. He was a Mekubal. Anybody know who Ramchal was? He's most famous for Mesilat Yesharim. Mesilat Yesharim is probably one of his, from his perspective, his more minor works. Because most of the things he wrote were heavy Kabbalah. Heavy, heavy, heavy Kabbalah that most people have no idea what he's talking about. Okay? So he says the following. Al Yedei Ha'ananim Ha'em. Through these clouds, Hayu Nimtza'im Yisrael Muvdalim Levadam. The Jewish people were separated alone. And literally separated, designated, raised up from the world. Kiken haya nimshach lehem mitziut he'ara hamishakenet otam levad. Through this, they were able to be found this mitziut hehara, this divine enlightenment that dwelled within them alone, nivdalim mikol ha'amim, separate from all the nations, umin nusim, nusaim, umin nutalim, min ha'olam hazeh atzmo. It literally raised them up and designated them, separated them from this world. Ve'elyonim mamash al kol goyei ha'aretz. Right, elevated, literally, spiritually exalted over all the nations of the world. Why was this done? In order to bring them to their appropriate maximum spiritual place. So he said, we think that we're like, they were camping in the desert like regular. He says, it's not that at all. The clouds of glory enveloped the Jewish people and literally raised them to a spiritual plane of existence separate from that of the rest of the world. Right? They were there to live in a different, in a cocoon, in a spiritual cocoon, in which they could literally, not figuratively, bask in the spiritual glory of God. What did the cloud do for them? What did it do for them?
Separated them from Gashmius.
Separated them? How? How do you separate somebody from Gashmius? No, no, but you have to do. What do we know about the cloud?
Right.
Everything is provided for them. Right? They don't have any physical needs. Right. That's the key. The first thing you need to do in order to make somebody a spiritual person is to take away all the things you have to worry about physically. Right. Because if you're working all day, if you're toiling in the fields, you're busy worried about toiling in the fields. But even more than that, it washed their clothes. That's what the Midrash says. That, you know, dry clean their clothes, it repaired their clothes, they never had to change their clothes over all that time. They live it in this, even the 40 years in the desert.
Nice,
sounds nice, doesn't it?
But it's a lower level than
higher level.
Did it themselves.
What do you mean? Lower level of what?
Of combining Gashmias
and Ruchanias.
Yeah,
but
you'll take it.
It was
so
given
what?
To them.
Exactly, why was it given to them?
Because they were immersed in spirituality.
Can you name another existence that you're aware of where people did not have to... Well, not at Har Sinai, the Jewish people were around the Har. Where people did not have to worry at all about any of their physical needs?
In Utero.
Well,
maybe.
In this world.
Noah?
Nope. He had to worry about his physical needs. That's correct. There's only one other example. Gan Eden. Gan Eden. Clothes? They didn't wear it. You didn't have to worry about it. Food? Garden provided for you, everything. That was the ideal. The ideal existence is an existence where we raise ourselves, we exist on a spiritual plane, and that we don't have to worry about the physical needs. Because God doesn't want really, in the ideal, Kadosh Baruch Hu doesn't want us to have to go to work and toil. He wants us to grow closer to Him. He wants us to become spiritual people. Lo and behold, whatever, bad things happened, we made mistakes, so therefore we're stuck with just trying to overcome our physicality. But the ideal is to exist on a spiritual level where we connect to the Ribbono Shel Olam in a mystical, spiritual way and grow in that way. And it's something that's even so esoteric, it's difficult to really comprehend and appreciate. That's where they were in the desert. That's what the clouds of glory did. It created this cocoon in which they were separate. They didn't have to worry about attack from behind, from outside. But they also didn't have to worry about their needs on the inside either. And then they could be one with the Ribbono Shel Olam. And it was to show them where they could achieve in order so that when they went into Eretz Yisrael, they could achieve it yet again. In that, with that in mind, okay, it's hard to comprehend, but it's a very deep idea. But that's what they were doing in the desert. That's why HaKadosh Baruch Hu brought them in the desert. Gave them the Torah and transported them in this bubble. Literally and figuratively, in order to give us a sense of what we could achieve. With that in mind, we now turn to Perek Yud Aleph. Okay? Pahalotcha Perek Yud Aleph. Okay, we're going to talk about the complainers. Vayihi ha'am kemitonenim ra ba'aznei Hashem. The nation was kemitonenim. I'm going to translate it the way we could translate it. Kemitonenim. Like complainers. Perek it up. Okay, the nation was like complainers.
Don't call your kids, tell them they are being not, they're not an idiot or
criticize their behavior and not their
person. Right, exactly. Is this what we're getting at?
No, that's modern parenting mumbo-jumbo. Probably true, but I could find you any number of examples if you want to. A friend of mine said that. He said if you look at the modern Jewish parenting literature, it exactly mimics the modern secular literature, and all we do is we find sources for it in the Torah. And I'm sure, like, if you look at the Rambam, what does the Rambam tell you to do? How are you supposed to educate your child?
Not allowed to hit children.
If you look at the Rambam, how does the Rambam tell you to educate your child?
You should give treats.
Oh, yeah, beat your child.
Yeah,
of course. What?
No, they do with learning.
Of course, the Rambam says, learning. Right? You spare. Ever heard the term "spare the rod, spoil the child"? Right? That's a Jewish idea. Okay, just understand that these trends change over time. Like, and tomorrow, if you'll tell me, I don't know, you gotta, you know, give kids time out, I could find you a Torah example for it as well. Okay, it's not that anyone is right or wrong, but you're not going to certainly find it in the Torah. Torah says certain things. It's interesting. One summer in Michigan, I gave a whole series on what it means to be a father. Because if you think about it, like the idea of the responsibilities of fatherhood are very not clearly delineated at all in the Torah. Think about it. Where does it tell the father what he has to do? There's a mission about it. What? Yeah, okay, good. You have to teach him what? You have to teach him Torah. You have to give him a trade. Does anybody know how old the father is? To what age a father is legally responsible to support his male child? 6 years old. That's correct. Right.
He learns a trade at 6, before 6.
At 6, he goes in the fields. Are you kidding? Yeah. We coddle our children.
Right. So yeah, the alternative is going to work.
At 6, are you kidding? At 6, you go to the fields. At 10, you're already, if you were lucky, you were apprenticing for a trade.
Yeah.
By 14, you were married. You had your own family you had to worry about.
Were people different then?
Lifespans were shorter. What do you mean people? Society was different.
They respected puberty.
Whatever. The long answer to your short question is no, that's not the source. Okay. Vayishma Hashem, vayichar apo. God heard and he was extremely angry. Vatifar bam esh Hashem. A fire of God burned within them. Vatochal bikseya machaneh. And it consumed the edge of the camp. Vayitzak ha'am el Moshe, vayitpaleh Moshe Hashem, el Hashem, vayitishka ha'esh. Right. They cried to Moshe, Moshe davened Hashem, no more fire. Vayikra Shem HaMakom Ahu Tav Eira. They called the place Tav Eira. See the root from Bo'er? Mm-hmm. Why? Ki Ba'ara Ba'am Eish Hashem. It was the burning place because we got burned. Okay. I'm not going to talk about this section. What in the world were they complaining about? It's unclear. It's a subject of huge debate in the Rishonim, in the Mepharshim. Look it up on your own. Dalid. Va'asasuf Asher Bikir Bo Hit Avu Ta'ava. The Asafsuf. I'm sure the article translates that as Asafsuf.
The rabble.
Right? How does he translate it?
The rabble.
What in the world are rabble? Today we call them
the
troublemakers, the nudniks. Who are they?
What the Asafsuf.
The Asafsuf. What's
people
the word?
Stop being an Asafsuf.
What?
We tell our kids. Stop being an Asafsuf.
No, you don't say that. You say stop acting like an Asafsuf. Remember? What are they? What are the Asafsuf?
The Egyptians
kind of
along the way.
What do we call those?
The Nochschleppers.
Very good. The Nochschleppers. What do they call? There's a term for the Nochschleppers.
Oh, right.
Oh.
No. There's a come on. Yeah? Very good. Erev Rav. Very good. Look at Rashi. Pasdaftuf. Elu Erev Rav. That's exactly who they are. Where do we have that term from? Anybody know? The Erev Rav appear in Shemot in when they're leaving Mitzrayim. The Erev Rav show up and says, "Vagam Erev Rav Allah itam." The Erev Rav also ascended from Egypt with the Jewish people. Shene esfu alehem betzeitam mi Mitzrayim. So what's Rashi's question and how is he answering it? Let's do a little nechama. What's Rashi's question? How is he answering it? What? But there's another secondary question. Once he answers that, he says, "Is the Erev Rav?" No.
Why?
What's Rashi's second question? Who are they? He answers. He's an Arab. No, okay. Now, what's the second question based on that?
When did they join?
Let me say, if Rashi had just said, Be'asafsuf, Elu Arab, so what question? What question would you have? That's correct. What was his question? What question is he answering? No, he already told you. They're the Arab. Stop a second. Let's think. Stop for a second.
Can I
What is the Asaf Sufim? Says Rashi, these are the Erev Rav. So what's your next question? There you go. Why are they called Asaf Suf? Why don't you just say the Erev Rav? Says Rashi, Shene'asfu Alehem Betseitam Mim Yisrael. Which only begs the question, which is, why were they not called Asaf Suf back then? Okay? I said yes, my bad. Sorry, can't take the call. Okay. Why are they not called Asaf Suf back then? Mm-hmm. How come they're called Asaf Suf here and Erev Rav there?
Something must have changed.
Okay, so we have to... So what does Asaf Suf mean?
Le'asof.
Gather together. What? No, they're like gathered together.
They hung out like gangs.
They hung out like gangs. Is it very... The name doesn't sound good.
No.
Does it? Really doesn't sound good. Okay. So just understand that's... Okay? Okay. That's a question. Is it exactly the Erev Rav, or did other people also gather afterwards? Somebody trying to get in? Okay. Abseder. Okay. Okay.
Thanks.
What happened? Hitavu ta'ava. Hitavu, they desired a ta'ava. What's a desire?
A craving.
Craving, a desire. Vayashuvu, you have to look very carefully at the language. Vayashuvu vayivku gam b'nei Yisrael vayomru mi yochadenu mi yachilenu basar. Vayashuvu, and they
sat.
That's vayeshuvu. Vayashuvu, they returned from
where?
Right. Vayivku, and they cried. Gam b'nei Yisrael. What is gam b'nei Yisrael?
Also
b'nei Yisrael. Vayomru, and they said mi yachilenu basar. There's a critical psychological truth that Kli Yakar shares from this pasuk. It says, who wanted meat? In the end, who complained about the meat? Who complained about the meat? All of Bnei Yisrael complained about the meat. So what in the world is the Asaf Suf doing here?
They started it.
Very good. Says Kli Yakar, and if I can find it, he says, Vayiku gam Bnei Yisrael, mi deka amar gam, also, shma mina sha'erev rab hayu bochim. The Erev Rav start crying tchila. Umevachim gam et bnei Yisrael imahem. So then they also cause bnei Yisrael to cry together with them. Which is very interesting. Meaning, complaining, kvetching is contagious. Is absolutely contagious. Right? Did the bnei Yisrael miss the meat?
They
didn't think about it until somebody. What?
When they were reminded of it.
When you start being reminded of it, then all of a sudden you realize.
Yeah, I haven't had meat for ages.
What?
Wow, I haven't had meat for ages.
I haven't had meat for ages. I really want meat. I really need meat. That it really is contagious. That, you know, complaining, negativity, is a plague. It could be a cancer. And you begin to, you know what I'm saying? I'll editorialize, and you guys can all jump on me if you want. There's a house being built up the street. It's a huge house. You know what I'm saying? It's a gorgeous house, and I wish the people who live there much bracha and hatzlacha. But it bothers me a little bit, and that's not because I'm jealous of. It's not because I'm jealous of their house. I really am not. I wish them well in their house. Maybe people will say this about my house as well. What?
It sounds like there's a but coming.
There's a but, of course. The but is, when somebody builds a huge, beautiful house that everybody walks by on the way to shul, people inevitably begin to wonder, you know, my house is a little small. And I don't have that beautiful Jerusalem stone. You know what I'm saying? It becomes a... You don't think so?
If you're happy with what you have, and if you're...
Weren't the Bnei Yisrael happy with what they had?
They were.
Until somebody reminded them, you know...
There is something else out there.
There is something else out there. Right. You know, the house that you thought when you moved here from Petah Tikva was huge and beautiful, if you walk by it every day enough, it really...
I mean, you can say it's nice, but not for me.
Do you know what goes through my mind? He's going to clean it.
Hopefully somebody else. Does everybody understand what I'm saying? What? I think there is such a thing as, like, as a community... as trying to maintain a certain monetary tsniut, not just because it's appropriate for that person, but what does it do for everybody else? And everybody knows there are communities, I mean, I know the communities in America, there are communities here where it just becomes a it becomes an ongoing competition. This guy added on, and now this one's going to add on, and
I.
You
see it with weddings.
What?
You
see it with a lot of things. Baruch Hashem, right, but this, we've talked about this, this community is not there right now. It's really not. It's a very tsanua community in so many of those ways. It's really, this is a cautionary tale. It's a real danger. What's that?
It's not
a tsanua community for Israel?
Yachasit.
Yachasit.
No, it's considered very Israeli. Something.
I'm thinking about in terms of like the smachot and what's accepted. You know what I'm saying? You make a bar mitzvah,
right?
But it's right. We were talking about
so
it. It can open up really quickly. It can open up. You know what I'm saying? Like what the expectations are, what you expect of yourself. You know what I'm saying? Oh, he did that. I want to do that now.
Outdoing one another.
Yeah, without a doubt, it's a problem. It's something to be aware of, and it's something to be aware of in that the choices that we make for ourselves, right? Invariably, like I'm building my house. How does that affect other people who come in? You know what I'm saying? It's a hard question, because you want nice things for yourself, but to what degree do you know what I'm saying? Is there a level of privacy and a level of everybody doesn't do what they want? And to what degree do I have a responsibility to rein it in to some degree, because not to show it off because it's nobody else's business.
But I think we have the reminders. I mean, I'm practically weekly have kids knocking on my door collecting for. From a Yerimi's Gemach, I mean, that's a reminder of people, and I say this to my kids all the time, just because we live here does not mean that they're kids on the Yishuv, that I'm not living in tiny little houses below poverty.
That's not my question. I agree with you. That's not the reminder.
But then you have that balance.
The reminder is not there are people that have less than you. The Yetzer Hara doesn't come from that. The Asafsuf Hitavu Ta'ava. The Ta'ava is the little seed that comes from somebody planting in you and saying, right, there's more to be had. It's very easy that people have less than you. You don't care about those people. I mean, we care about them, but that doesn't affect us in this area. So he doesn't have, big deal. But that guy does. Yeah, I'm just, I know I'm editorializing to raise an issue.
Oh, you're right. You have to be careful.
What?
Because it was getting out of hand.
Really?
Say again?
That's why we moved out of Florida. At Boca Raton where we lived, it was getting out of hand. That this one, after doing this one, my parents just told me that somebody's building a 8,000 square foot house, and this one. And it just keeps going and going. You know, you have kids in school who have their Jaguars already. They're in high school.
You mean?
Well, because either they're separate or... sort of say that they're separate, but they were there, and then I sort of some contrast that I see because we were talking about the Ananiah Kavod and them being very separate.
It's a very interesting question. It's a very fascinating question. The Asaf Suf and the Erev Ra raise a whole range of issues, i.e., A, when they left Egypt and the Asaf Suf came, Moshe could have easily said, no, this is not, we're not for you. You stay here. But he did not. He accepted the Asaf Suf. So many of the problems that come later on start from this Erev Rav, start from this Asaf Suf. You know what I'm saying? Of keeping them in, of not pushing them out, this idea of Asher B'Kirbo that you're raising. And the issues that arise from having people in your midst that are not necessarily identifying with the goals that you wanted. Why did they come?
Extremely relevant now.
Very much so.
Extremely.
Yes, very, 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 very much so.
The lesson you kind of hear, keep yourselves isolated. It almost seems to be suggesting that, at least on that.
All right, if you want, I have to do a little more research on the Erev Rav in order to do it comprehensively. I have another shir that I give on, I give to Sheirut Leumi girls. Sometimes we have these Yomi Yunin or the Mei Yunin or Rot. So the Sheirut Leumi girls come, so you want to give something relevant to them. So I speak to them about what I call Hachlala or Histadrut, which means going out into the big world or trying to create a little world for yourself. And I did a lot of research trying to find different sources about which is better. Is it better to go out into the big world and try to affect people and try to be, you know what I'm saying, live out there, or is it better to live in here? Anybody want to guess where I find more sources for out there or in here?
In here.
Out there.
In here.
In here.
Way more in here. In fact, I have difficulty finding anything that suggested going living out in the big world.
A
very.
I read that.
You have?
Yeah. For women specifically?
No, for people, for us, for men,
people
for everyone.
To do shlichot.
Right, to
I
do
don't
it, right.
Where, but I have, for sure.
Right. Find it, because it's very, very rare. You know what I'm saying? Especially if you look at the Rambam, Hilchot Deot.
Well, so,
He's extremely, extremely sharp about how other people, the people around us, affect us, and how it's better to close ourselves off from people that have a negative influence.
We need both.
You want me to read you the Rambam?
What about the Lubavitch? They go out and they
go out and
you need
Jews.
You want me to You want me to read you the Rambam?
That's not.
We have to get to our shiur. Okay.
But they're trying to bring Jews back.
Exactly. They have to go out into the world to do that.
Yeah, that's true.
But they still
They
desired a desire. They want meat. Zachanu et hadagah asher nochal b'mitzrayim chinam. We remember the fish that we ate for free, meaning chinam, limitless fish. We remember the gourds. We remember the melons. Hachatzir. What's chatzir? What do you got? No. Chatzir. What do you have? Okay. Bitzalim. The onions. The garlic. Leeks. Oh, I remember those leeks. The atah. Nashenu yivesha enkol bilti el haman einenu. And now our souls are dry. We got nothing except for this man. This man, Nebuch. Okay? Right? Now, we are dreaming. That's what they say. What in the world is going on? How could their souls be dry and call? There's nothing here other than the man. Right? It's difficult for us, on the one hand, to imagine that here they are, they're living in this desert, everything is taken care of them. What does the man taste like?
Whatever you want.
Don't take the meter so literally. What does the man taste like?
Nothing.
No.
Well,
Tofu
takes on the
flavor. Okay. One second. Ugot vayata amo kitam lishad hashemen. It was like
oil.
It was like an oily cake. It was a flowery substance that had a certain, I imagine, subtle taste to it. Right. You know, not funnel cakes, not that oily, nothing. Right. Wasn't elephant ears either. Okay? What did it taste like?
Chiffon cake.
Oil.
It tasted.
It tasted like sustenance that was nutritious.
That's right. It tasted like nutritious sustenance. Why?
Because that was
the
Remember, if your idea, exactly, if your idea is to live a spiritual life, you cannot live a spiritual life eating a 5-star French meal every day. Why did it taste like anything you wanted? It's not that it was about tasting like anything you wanted, because we're translating our ideal into a physical world. Oh, I want pizza today. The idea is not that you can have anything that you want. The idea is that you don't want pizza today, because you don't need pizza, because you're living in this world where the things that are really important are connecting to the Ribono Shel Olam. Think about the most spiritual people we could think of. You know what I'm saying? Great spiritual people. Right? You don't find them ordering out Chinese food, because they're not what it's not what it's about. Right.
That's why we don't have takeaway.
Ah, there you go.
But these people, this generation, had come from being enslaved, where they didn't have choices and they felt their slavery. And perhaps in some way maybe they felt that, well, maybe they didn't have a whole lot of choice of that either. But the thing is that they went from that kind of enslavery to
this kind of slavery.
This kind of situation where it seems maybe they also didn't have a whole lot of choice and they maybe just weren't ready for that kind of spirituality. It's not like they went gradually from here to there and developed the spirituality. They kind of got thrust into it.
I mean, this is the whole question of what was God planning when he took the Jews out of Egypt in the first place. You know what I'm saying? But it's really difficult for us to imagine, because we're not in this, in Anane Hakava, we don't live in this spiritual existence in order to... Who says you need a process? You know what I'm saying? The process...
The process has to come either before or after.
It was clearly working until somebody... It was clearly working until somebody said, wait, one second. I'm sick of this man. I want a pizza. You know what I'm saying? I'd like a steak. I'd like a good steak.
But the thing that's
on the one hand, the question... Like, how is it that the man, everything is provided for them, and then all of a sudden they say, no, I want something else. Isn't that the essence of what the Yetzer Hara is? Do we not know of people, or experience it ourselves, where really, you have everything you need, and all of a sudden, the Yetzer Hara says to him, forget everything you need, that's boring, go get something else. go get something exciting. I want the spice of life.
Go to Gadara and get Chinese.
It's almost asking for physical life.
Go to Gadara and Chinese is a halabai.
Yeah,
that's
physical life.
What?
It's almost
that's exactly what they're asking. They're saying they're rejecting the spirituality of living, of communing with God in the desert, and saying, you know what? I don't need that. I just give me a steak. You know what I'm saying? Just give us meat. And it's not just about that. The Midrash comes along and says Rashi, one second, let's read on a little bit. And then I'll
Zion.
I'm on Zion.
The man is a
God who Enoke in Habdolach. Translate for me.
No, Zion. The man, now, the man was like coriander seed, and its color was like the color of the Bedolach.
Right, exactly. Nobody knows what that means. Shatu ha'am v'laktu v'tachadu v'reichaim. So they gathered it, and then they ground it up. Odachu v'bedolcha. They crushed it in a pestle, right, a mortar. U'bishlu v'parur v'asu uto ugod. It was a base food. It was like a soy flour product. Okay?
And don't eat it with oil.
Yeah, they crushed it up. You add a little garlic powder and cinnamon sugar and you're all set to go. Okay?
There wasn't garlic.
Whatever. Okay? But it wasn't. It's nice to think the Midrash should taste like whatever you want. But that's not. It wasn't, and it because for a reason. It wasn't supposed to be that. It was supposed to be what you needed. Yeah. It's interesting. Right. What does it say? A tzaddik, a tamid chacham. Zohi darko shel Torah. You know what the rest of the Mishnah and Pirkei Avot is? Pat v'melech tocham. You dip your bread in a little bit of salt. What else do you need? That's darko shel Torah. Because?
That's what you need.
What else do you need? If you are engaging in spiritual pursuits, right, the physical desires of great food, they just draw you away. And that's why Yeshiva Shuvah is so bad. It's intentionally bad for that reason. Okay. That was a joke. Uberedet hatal al hamachaneh. Yeah. Uberedet hatal al hamachaneh. That's why the Shad Hashem, and that's why it's so oily. Because the man is so oily. Uberedet hatal al hamachaneh. The dew would descend on the camp, and then the man would fall, would descend upon it. Vayishma Moshe et ha'am bochel nemishpechotav ish lepetach ahalo. So it got so bad, they were literally crying, each one in front of his tent.
Wow.
God gets really mad, and it's also bad in the eyes of Moshe. Now, the Midrash picks up on this. It's a very, very important, very well-known theme. What else were the Jewish people complaining about? What did this fish... First of all, the question, like, what in the world are they talking about? What in the world are they talking about that
being
really get
taken
the point.
Out of
well, that we remember, you know, it's.
But they never had them.
No.
Did they really have free fish, fruit, and vegetables? They can eat whatever melons they wanted.
Rashi says, yeah, also about.
About what?
The halachot of.
We'll get there in a second. I'm going to get there. Right. Very good. That what in the world are they talking about? Are they really able to take whatever they want in? So they start to say, well, maybe if you worked for a master in the field, you have the ability to, you know, think about slaves not in terms of like, you know, massive slaves at building the pyramids, but each family had slaves also, right? And the family, you know what I'm saying, like, had to support its slaves, so that like they would let you take from the field in order to support yourself. But it's just hard to imagine that you had as many vegetables that you wanted. It was the good life. So isn't it interesting that, you know, from a certain perspective, here they are, they're taken care of in the desert, God's giving them everything they need, and now all of a sudden that they want something else,
they miss what they had.
Like, oh, it was so
aliyah.
Great. It was so great. Are you crazy?
No, it's like making aliyah.
Well, then it was great. No.
I miss this from England.
What do you miss? Right. Well, I miss Jerusalem pizza in Detroit. Like, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Really? That was so good? Oh, well, it was good, but like, it's all a question of your priorities, which is the problem. But it's so natural. Because when things are bad, when you're not happy, when you're struggling with something, then all of the things that you used to remember all of a sudden become expanded in your mind. Oh, remember how great it was? Yeah. And what don't you forget? Yeah, okay, maybe you did have some fish every now and then. What about the, you know, brutal slavery? What about that? Oh, no.
Well, you're not saying you missed the whippings.
Right. Yeah, we got whipped once in a while. You know, but we had fish. Really? Really? Fish? That's what you remember? You know what I'm saying?
You lived on the Nile. So
but it's just understand that the human nature of the human nature that's so true here that we all do this.
The good old days.
Right. When it's tough and when we're struggling, we remember the good things about what we had and don't have, as opposed to the negative as well.
Nostalgia is the enemy of history.
Nostalgia is the enemy of history. Mm. Never heard that before.
My husband does it all the time.
So true. That looks like a Rashi that you were going to talk about. Rashi, and this is the theme of the Midrash that comes up. Mishpachot, mishpachot. What does it mean, mishpachotam? They were crying to, according to their family?
Where?
Rashi on Yud.
Rashi on Yud.
Mishpachot, mishpachot. Ne'esafim ubochim. They would gather as families, as, you know, clans. Lefarsein ta'arumatan begaloi, in order to publicize their complaint. They got together. They joined together. That's what Rashi said. Well, they followed. This is all the Bnei Yisrael. The Asaf Suf were only the instigators. The rest of the Rashi. Rabotenu amru the mishpechotav, according to their families, al iske mishpachot, on familial issues. Meaning what? Al arayot haneesrot lahem. Right. Arayot, the sexual relationships that were now forbidden from them. Okay? Ta'ava, a desire, doesn't just stop at food. Right? There are basically two major forms of gluttony. Right? One is
food.
The other is sex.
You're forgetting the third.
Rock and roll.
Sex, drugs,
and roll. Food, sex, drugs, and rock and roll? No, food? Food is not one of them?
Yeah.
Food, sex, drugs, and rock and roll. Sex, drugs, and rock and roll. And I hate to break to you, rock and roll and drugs are just a hecatensa to get to the sex.
Right.
I kid you not. That's just absolutely true. Right. Okay? So I'm going to read you what?
Woodstock.
That's what they're there for. Okay. Absolutely. Okay. So the Kliyakar picks up on this as well. This is a very, very famous theme that you should be aware of. It's very important to be aware of that the Mitonanim, all of these things are allusions in some sense. We remember the fish. He's like, what in the world is it that they remember the fish? One second. What's that? Okay, let me just find where I'm looking at. If you have Kliyakar. What? It's on. Yeah, you don't have your Chumash with you. Okay, the Kliyakar says the following.
What?
The Kefil Lashon. Hit avu ta'ava. What is hit avu ta'ava? They desired a desire. Why is it?
They craved a craving.
They craved a craving. They desired a desire. Ki, he says, kach hamida ba'arayot. This is how sexuality works. Ta'ava goreret ta'ava. Right? A desire creates the yearning for another desire. Kamosha amru razal, chachamim said, masbio ra'ev. The way the sexual desire works, if you feed him, he's hungry for more. Whereas if you don't feed him, he's happy with what he has. That's the Yetzer for arayot. Okay? Vayomru bapeh. What? It's true. Absolutely true. How do you know? I proved you. From the pornographic industry. Right? You think you see one woman, why would you need next month's magazine? It's the same, isn't it? No, it's not the same. Whereas people who don't engage in such things, they don't. Which is why it's like a gateway drug. That's it's a problem.
It builds up.
Of course it builds up. That's exactly the point. The more the more you do it.
If you don't do it, it builds up.
No.
Yeah.
Exactly opposite. That's exactly what Chazal said.
What about like priests?
If you refrain from it, no, there's just normal sexual activity, obviously. That's nothing. That's zero. The Torah doesn't believe in abstinence lagamre. For anybody, there is no such thing. No, of course they had their wives. They didn't have their wives.
What does it mean here?
It means they couldn't sleep with their sisters. They couldn't have massive orgies like they did in Egypt. Yes. Arayot. The term arayot, erva, is a forbidden sexual relationship. Okay? That's an important point. Okay?
Yeah.
One second. He says also, mashi tchilu, one second. V'yomru b'peh male. They said explicitly, mi yachilenu basar. Who will give us meat? Basar hainu basar erva. Okay, the word, they were saying exactly what they wanted. Right? We would like some flesh. Who will feed us flesh? Okay, and
so this is why it's the men who are outside the
tent. What?
So it's the men outside the tent.
Okay, it's the men outside the tent. Okay, he says that's why it starts with meat and then ends with fish. What are fish a symbol of?
Fertility.
Very good. Lashon daga al hapritsut ba'arayot. From Lashon basar. Because dagim, prutzim yoter mibasar kochai. They are the most fertile, the most reproductive beings out there. Okay, that's why they said, who will give us meat, etc., etc. One second. And he says, I think this is also a pshat as well. Because basar, miyachalina basar, is like an entendre. Who will give us meat? He says, that's not it. They wanted kavatam hayal levakesha basar, hamechamein biyoter. It warms up the palate. It heats up the body. Umarbet ta'avat hamishgal. And it increases the desire for sexuality. So that's exactly what the idea is. When you engage in physical pleasures, pleasure begets pleasure. Desire begets desire. Right? It's very difficult to say, I'm going to have this and not have that. And this is exactly what they engaged in. It wasn't that they just wanted to have a barbecue. It was that they were rejecting the spiritual life, that they were existing in the spiritual plane in which they existed in the desert, and saying, that's better to go back to Egypt, where we could live this physical life and not have the burden of this spirituality. And look what they say. He says, "V'nafshenu yivesha." What do they say? Ata, and back on Vav. "Nafshenu yivesha en kol." What is a nefesh?
They saw
which?
Physical.
As opposed to?
The
very good. The nefesh is not the neshama. Our nefesh is dry. You know why it's dry?
It's the blood.
You know why it's dry? Because it's supposed to be dry. That's correct. That's exactly the point. And this perhaps is, I think, why Moshe goes gets so upset and why it's considered so bad in the eyes of God. Because of you're living in this spiritual existence, you're living on this plane, and all of a sudden the Jewish people say, you know what?
In the fall, like after Matan Torah, it's like the highest level and they drop to the lowest level.
Not the lowest level. I mean, it's hard to imagine, but correct. Correct.
Basic.
Right. You're on this level, and all of a sudden, this is really what you're concerning yourself with. This is, you know what I'm saying? And Moshe doesn't know what to do because he's been leading them and guiding them. And we see from here that Moshe Rabbeinu really turns to God and says, I can't do this on my own. And as we'll soon see, say, what's the solution that God says? God says, gather 70 people, and I'll descend my nevuah upon them. How does that solve the problem? But if we understand that the problem was a lack of, I guess, close enough hadracha, a lack of spirituality within the camp, if we understand that what they wanted wasn't just meat, but they wanted a physical existence over a spiritual existence, then it would help that Moshe would have help. It would help that Moshe's spirit would be spread upon amongst the Jewish people, because then the job of these other Nevi'im would be to, you know, serve as surrogates, to serve as centers, to serve as spirit of spirituality within the camp, and not just having to rely on Moshe Rabbeinu himself.
Yeah. But that's where we get back to the fact that generation didn't have, like, they went from one given very, you know, the slave mentality and the slave lifestyle to this thing that was meant to be on a high level of spirituality, but they didn't have anything that got them from there to there, in, like, psychologically. It wasn't, they... You have to somehow or other build towards it. It's a process. They need somebody, as you say, like if you have people working with small groups or whatever, that it's to help them get from one place to the other, to help when they have these crises.
The problem I have with your comment, I understand exactly what you're saying, is so then what was God's plan? God made a mistake? He was wrong?
Well, you have to start somewhere. Right?
You don't understand, but he doesn't know human nature. The Ribbono Shel Olam created us.
No,
he doesn't know human nature?
Obviously he knows human nature. We don't know that God didn't know that this wasn't going to happen. Obviously Hashem knew it was going
to
happen.
God planned for them to complain about the meat, and he wanted to punish them with the slab. You understand what I'm saying? Look,
yeah,
whatever you say,
you have to separate them from the original situation to start to get them.
He did. It's called Mount Sinai, Har Sinai. They had this awesome, unbelievable, awe-inspiring, life-ending spiritual experience. They had Kriyat Yamsuf. They had these incredible experiences which literally jerked them out of Egypt and brought them onto a different plane.
Right,
they experienced God.
They had amazing experiences, and he also screwed up. The exact level of how much.
There's a certain person like Derech Hashem Shir who has this, who says every time, like Derech Hashem is all about just this idea of where we came from, the idea of Gan Eden, and trying to get back there. That's more or less what it's about. And all the time, he keeps saying, seems like a lot of effort and energy, and all we do is get, and we end up messing up in the end anyway. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's a very challenging human condition that we're stuck in this situation. I don't know what the answer is. I would prefer to say that the shortcoming is within us. Yes, of course it's harder. Of course it's harder to make that leap. But that's what God expects of us. It's really what's expected of us.
But we find shepherds, we expect them to go slowly. Because otherwise
they're not living in that, because they're not living in the desert. They're not dwelling within God.
Same thing with us. We didn't live that type of life. Exactly. We need to go slowly.
What do you mean?
Spiritual life. Everything spiritual. Nothing physical.
Is everything being provided for you?
No.
Are you living in the desert? Did you experience Har Sinai? You know what I'm
it's
saying?
It's not something they did on their own. Yeah, there was no will there.
There was an element of choice. I understand what you're saying. It's not a question of blame or not blame.
They chose what it was going to be.
What?
They chose to go to leave Mitzrayim and to do that, not knowing 100% what it was going to be. They're just assuming it was going to be better.
It is better.
Obviously it's better.
Right.
I'm not denying that it's better. Obviously it's better. But they didn't know exactly.
They didn't know that God was going to make them do stuff.
They didn't know what it was going to involve. They didn't know the details of what it was going to involve. And that, you know, what, I can't have sex with my sister?
I'm sensitive to what you're saying. I'm sensitive to what you're saying.
Yeah, they didn't necessarily know that that was part.
I understand what you're saying. All right, turn to Chafala for a second. I want to end on a question. Something for you to study. You could study with your kids. Because they're very, very, very important Rashi. God says, okay, they want meat, I'll give them meat. Not one day, not 2 days, not a week, a month of meat, and until it literally coming out of their noses. Okay? Kaf Aleph. Vayomer Moshe, Sheish Meot Elef Raglia Amasher Anuchi Bekirba. Well, there's 600,000 people. There's millions of people. Vata Amarta Basar Etein Lahem Ve'achlu Chodesh Emim. You're going to give them meat for a month? Hatzon U'Bakar Yishachet Lahem U'Matzah Lahem Im Et Kol Digei Ha'ayam Ya'asef Lahem U'Matzah Lahem. Is there enough? Do we have enough sheep and cattle to give them meat to eat? You could fish all the fish in the sea and it wouldn't be enough for them. Okay? What is the obvious question that emanates from Moshe's comment that Rashi is going to bring up?
He's talking about an endless desire for it.
Well, correct. Rashi's comment is, what does Moshe seem to be telling God?
Doesn't matter what
he never
be happy.
What? No, you're answering the question. You're answering the question. What does Moshe seem to be telling God?
Why are you frozen?
Not why. Not why. Come on, read what he says.
Would it ever be enough?
I know.
I'll never be happy.
No. Literally, read it literally.
When?
Ata amarta basar etein v'achlu chodesh yamim? Moshe seems to be saying, we don't have, there's not enough. Doesn't, is that what he says? He says, yeah, there are 600,000 people here. And you say, I'm going to give them hatzon u'bachar yishachet u'matzah lehem? There's not enough. How are we going to give it to them? So what Rashi, it's a big machloket among the Tanaim, Rabbi Akiva, and it's a long Rashi. It's a long Rashi. It's worth reading the Rashi. Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Shimon. Right? What is Moshe saying? What does he mean by this? So I suggest noting this Rashi on Chaf Bet and studying it at home. Like, what's the problem with this? You know what I'm saying? Take an English out. What's the problem with Moshe's comment? And how does Rashi resolve it or deal with the problem? That'll be for homework. Okay? And we'll just, you know, and we'll conclude. I think that what I began with, this is the struggle that all of us struggle with. Me this summer, you know, building a house, but all of us, you know, at any given time, about not having that, like, that desire overcome you, and because it has the potential to overtake you and to tell you, you know, like, I'm tired of chicken again. You know what I'm saying? And you know what I'm saying? And it just becomes this, it can become an overwhelming feeling that's very dangerous. Because it makes you lose any appreciation for the tremendous blessings that you have. And people, lo aleinu, it's not such a hard thing to, you know, I'm sure we know people who've thrown out all the great things that they have, literally because they hitavu ta'ava. One desire leads to another desire, leads to another desire. And let us never think like, you know, oh, these are the people over there. Right? It's human nature. It's part of us. And I think the way to combat it is to be aware of the asaf suf. Not the asaf suf around us, the asaf suf within us. Because if you let the asaf suf fester, right, it has the ability to grow. As opposed to if you do our best, that's what Lori started with, to try to balance. The balance is before it even begins, I think. To make sure that you're happy with what you have and not let it become who you are. not let that gashmiut become who you are, because it has then the potential, the great potential, to be very destructive. Stop here.